Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. CBS News has confirmed that Pete Rose, known as MLB's Hit King, who was later banned for betting on games, has died. CBS's Matt Piper.
Pete Rose was Major League Baseball's all-time hits leader. The Reds legend won two World Series with Cincinnati and another with the Philadelphia Phillies. Rose spent parts of 24 seasons in the majors, and over that span, he amassed 4,256 hits.
I'm part of history, you know, and there's no question in my mind, I'll die the Hit King.
Rose has been on the permanently ineligible list since 1989, when he agreed to that punishment as a consequence of his gambling on MLB games, alleged at the time.
Regardless of what the commissioner said today, I did not bet on baseball.
But later confirmed, Pete Rose was 83 years old. Matt Piper, CBS News.
At least 130 deaths in six states are blamed on Hurricane Helene in the southeast. There has been catastrophic flooding. CBS's Skylar Henry in the Asheville, North Carolina area.
This will take years to clean up if it's ever.
Nowhere appears to be hit harder than western North Carolina, where some areas received more than 2 feet of rain. Roughly 600 people are still unaccounted for.
It's hard to understand. I mean, this is just massive.
The city of Asheville and the area around it has been largely cut off since Friday. Cell service is mostly out. Electricity won't be restored for days, and help has been slow to arrive.
We've got a lot of family businesses that have been here since the turn of the century. They're devastated.
A shelter-in-place order for more than 90,000 residents east of Atlanta, Georgia, is lifted after a chemical fire. Some 25,000 port workers from Massachusetts to Texas could walk off the job in just over 2 hours. The union and an industry group representing operators and shipping companies can't agree on a new labor contract. White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre.
We support collective bargaining. It is the best way for American workers and employers to come to a fair agreement. We encourage all parties to come to the bargaining table and negotiate in good faith.
Experts warn a prolonged strike could lead to higher costs on goods nationwide. The Israeli army says it's conducting targeted ground raids against Hezbollah in South Lebanon. CBS's Imtiaz Tayeb reports from Beirut.
Hezbollah is in complete disarray following Israel's killing of so many of its leaders. But the militant group's number two, a man by the name of Naim Qassem, who spoke for the first time since the killing of Hezbollah leader Hassan Nasrallah, insists his fighters are ready to confront any kind of Israeli ground invasion.
Japan's Prime Minister Kishida steps down as planned before likely successor Shigeru Ishiba takes office. This is CBS News.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Seth here, host of Over the Back Fence. We're on the air live every Saturday from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m., taking your calls to buy or sell, talk local events, or whatever, only on WFHR.
Civic Media News, I'm Derek Tritz. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Red Cross volunteers from Wisconsin are helping people in the aftermath of Hurricane Helene. Terry Bell reports.
In all, 1,400 workers from around the country are part of the relief effort. 25 volunteers are from Wisconsin. Their assignments could change at any time. In fact, Red Cross volunteers have to be on standby in case they're needed more somewhere else in the country. I'm Terry Bell.
A high school football game in Milwaukee was cut short Friday when a gun in the stadium went off by accident. Police say an off-duty security guard accidentally fired his weapon during a game at Wisconsin Lutheran High School. The stands were emptied and everyone was sent home. The officer injured himself and was treated. The school is now going over its safety protocols. And that's what you need to know. I'm Derek Tritz and this is Civic Media News.
The Packers fall to 2-2. Hi, I'm Jimmy Cuska with sports, filling in for Mike Clemens. Minnesota led Green Bay 28-0 at the half, but the Packers were able to move the ball and put up points in the second half before falling short against the Vikings 31-29. Coach Matt LaFleur said the team started slow but finished strong.
Unfortunately, we just didn't get enough completions, but I did think he looked, as the game went, it seemed to me that he looked more and more comfortable. We made more explosive plays, which is tough to do when a team's sitting back in two shell.
Green Bay heads to LA to play the Rams on Sunday. The Milwaukee Brewers are off today as they await their postseason opponent. The Mets and Braves play a doubleheader today to determine postseason seeding. A sweep by either team means the Brewers get Arizona. A split means Milwaukee faces the Mets tomorrow. First pitch is just after 4:30 in Milwaukee tomorrow. And after dropping two games, the 2-2 Badgers host Purdue on Saturday with an 11 a.m. kickoff. Filling in for Mike Clemens, I'm Jimmy Cuska with Civic Media Sports.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Breezy this evening, mostly clear tonight, and cooler with lows in the upper 40s. Not as warm tomorrow, mid-60s with sun. Temps level off in the low 70s for Wednesday and Thursday, looking for a mostly sunny sky. Cooler again towards Friday. It's 69 degrees right now.
Maggie Dawn.
Next up, I'll be joined by Amanda Merkway, the advocacy director of the ACLU Wisconsin. We'll discuss the election fraud being engaged by MAGA Republicans and what you can do about
it. The Maggie Dawn Show, weekday afternoons from 2 till 4.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, home for the Todd Allball Show.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Time for a deep dive into the one issue that matters most in a capitalist democracy, money. This is Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money, a joint production of the Maggie Dawn Show and the Patriotic Millionaires. Now, here's Maggie Dawn.
Welcome, Wisconsin and beyond. I'm Maggie Dawn. And as it is the 3 o'clock hour, we are talking about money. And I can think of no better guest than Pennsylvania Congresswoman Summer Lee to talk about what I think is one of the most groundbreaking pieces of legislation that I have ever seen in my 47 years on this planet. But first, let me tell you a little bit about Representative Lee. She was born and raised in the Mon Valley of Pennsylvania. She's been a community organizer. She's an attorney. She went to Penn State, go Nittany Lions, and Howard University School of Law, where she focused on civil rights and social justice advocacy. She's been a labor organizer working for the Fight to 15 to increase the minimum wage. And in 2018, she won a seat in the Pennsylvania State House of Representatives. But she's parlayed that into becoming the first Black woman from Western Pennsylvania ever elected to Congress. So first, Representative Lee, my congratulations for that accomplishment. And secondly, my congratulations on this incredible piece of legislation that you brought to the floor and introduced last week.
Oh, thank you. And listen, Maggie, when you say that you could think of no one better, I can. I just want to start by saying that. I can definitely think of better folks to be here. But we're really lucky to have had good folks around us to help us to work on this. People who have been in this particular struggle, in this particular fight for income equality and so much more, way longer than me, but I'm grateful to be in the position now.
Well, you happen to be the one to bring this legislation forward. And when we think about social justice, right, in my head, that always equates to economic justice. We cannot have social justice without true economic choice. For some context here, people, before we get into these particular policy proposals in the American Sustainability Act, let's just check where we are today. Since the 1970s, productivity and worker compensation, wages, have basically gone in opposite directions. Workers are so much more productive than they have been. And yet wages have effectively stagnated or gone down on a real dollar basis. This means that the benefits of our economy, the benefits of your hard work, aren't coming into your family's pocketbook. They're going to the upper 1% of the richest and wealthiest Americans. It's even worse when we look at the 0.01%, the really, really wealthy. Again, more than 40% of working Americans make less than the median cost of living for a single adult with no children. More than 40%, that's incredible. And it's even more heartbreaking to think more than 70% of Americans make less than the median cost of living for one adult and one child. The economy is not working for the middle class. That feeling that you might be getting screwed, yep, you're not inventing that. That's a real feeling. That is legitimate. And what I find so incredibly powerful about this American Stability Act that you've put forward, Representative Lee, is that it addresses both tax policy and wage reforms. So I want to hand it to you to start telling people about these fundamental policy approaches that as soon as I started reading them, I went, of course we should be doing that.
Yeah, you nailed it. It's this idea that for so long, Americans have felt like they don't even have a chance, right? We don't have a chance to compete. When we think about the inequality gap, the wealth inequality gap, it's not anywhere close to shrinking. And this is something that has been persistent in and out of administrations, in and out of the volley between parties. It is an American staple. And so many people have grown almost just accustomed to it, right? Accustomed to this idea that there are some people who are just bound to be incredibly wealthy. And there are some people who are bound to be working from paycheck to paycheck. And the reason why it was so important that we approach it this way is, first of all, it's because of my lived experience. When I was on the fight for 15, right, it was a brief time because it was quick before I realized that we were not going to organize our way out of this type of just income stagnation, out of this type of tax issues, one McDonald's, one Wendy's, at a time. And that was literally what I was doing, right? I'm going from Wendy's to McDonald's to, you know, Burger King. And I'm trying to convince, you know, folks who are being screwed in their wages by multi-billion dollar corporations that they are worthy of 15. This is back in 2017, that they were worthy of 15. So what the American Stability Act is attempting to do, right, is a transformative package of legislation that doesn't just address the need for an urgent raising of the wage. It also has to increase the ways in which the amount we make, and then the level of, you know, our living expenses, our cost of living, all so many programs that we need. How is it always falling behind no matter what happens, right? So that's the first piece, right? We want to make sure that we're raising the wage immediately, that we are, you know, not just tying it to the rate of inflation, right? But we are making sure that it is to the rate of a living wage, right? So that is the first thing it does. The second thing is that tax piece, that tax reform piece, making sure that we're shifting the burden from the folks who are working class, middle class in this country to the people who you mentioned, right? Not just the 1%, the 0.01% of people who have seen and experienced so many benefits in this rigged system. And we have to start to unrig it.
I just want to make a couple points of emphasis about what you're talking about, Representative Lee. The first thing that I noted was we need to stop calling this a minimum wage, because some baked into that is this valuing or this idea that you should pay your workers the very least that you can get away with.
Yeah.
When corporations and business owners, you don't put those shekels in your pocket without your workers. They need to eat at that same table you do. If you're getting fat, your workers get fat along with you. That is the way the social contract in capitalism is designed to work. So the legislation, its very namesake, is that we're going to move away from this concept of a minimum wage to a stability wage, immediately raise that wage floor to $20 an hour, and then index that to either annual inflation or the increase in the average wage for all workers in a given region or in the United States, whichever is higher. This effectively would ensure that we all get fat if our business owners are getting fat. And I mean that, in a really positive way. The idea of a stability wage. Thank goodness. It is not a good thing to try to nickel and dime and get the very most by paying the very least to your workers. I've never understood that point.
It's incredibly counterintuitive and it's counterproductive. Yes. What the reality is that's not a secret. We recognize that it's so demoralizing for American workers, right, who do grind it out. You know, we often talk about a 40 hour work week, right? But we know people who are working well above a 40 hour work week. But what they see and what they find is that particularly those who live in areas where the cost of living is incredibly high, right? That they're still increasingly being priced out of housing, that they're increasingly being priced out of the areas that they called home, areas where they work, right? Or where, you know, they go to school or university, right? And when we're thinking about that, the long-term effects of that, right? Of people who cannot afford to live in the communities that they work in, people who can consistently show up for work and they watch their bosses get wealthier and wealthier while they can't afford basic living expenses like their food, you know, like transportation. That is a fundamental problem that we have in the American economy. And it's not one, like you said, that we're going to be able to nickel or dime our way out. Recognizing, we say often, right, that a high tide lifts all ships, but we refuse to apply it to workers.
And I wanted to make this point also clear. When we talk about the stability wage, it is the way that in my economist brain, I always thought we should do it, is we know how much it costs to live in a given region. You put that basket of goods that we need together to live, a roof over our heads, food on the table, medical care, transportation, again, all of those costs, and you back it out, assume a 50-hour work week, because even that, I think, is low for what some people are working. And you can actually derive an hourly wage that is a stability wage. Folks, I am joined by Representative Summer Lee of the 12th District of Pennsylvania. She is a congresswoman helping to reshape the American economy to get back to serving the American middle class, and to make sure that the wealthiest pay their fair share. Now, I wanted to ask you a little bit more about a couple of these specific tax policy provisions, because the first one that blew my mind was the cost of living exemption. Explain it to folks.
Certainly. So when we think about our tax brackets, right, that's kind of where that comes in. Everybody kind of knows the vague idea of a tax bracket. And the people who worry most about tax brackets are people who are making less, right, than a particular amount, right? It's not millionaires who worry about a tax bracket. In fact, once they get to a certain, you know, income, they're not worried about a tax bracket at all. So what we're thinking about is like a living wage at this point is largely calculated at being about $40,000 a year, right? We can argue that, but the indicators, calculators,
give or take.
That's give or take, but that's what they're saying. And they're taking into account, right, basic living expenses, things of that nature, right? What we're saying is that people who do not reach that threshold or up until that threshold should not shoulder a tax burden, right? So they should be exempt from those sorts of, so from that sort of taxing, right? But what we're also saying on the back end, right, and this is the part where we're shifting it, right, is that folks who make over $1 million, for instance, we would apply a 3% surtax. If you make over, I think, 15 million within our bill, you know, it would be an additional 5%, because the reality is that folks who are making up to the living wage are still being drowned out by a tax burden, whereas people who make a certain amount at that point, they're not getting any higher amounts. And that's where we want to tackle that piece right there.
I cannot wait to dig into this more. We're going to explain all of those pieces of this new American Sustainability Act again, because they are revolutionary and yet so common sense. I'm joined by Representative Summer Lee here in this day's episode of Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money, a joint production of the Civic Media Radio Network and the Patriotic Millionaires. We're going to dig in more to this cost of living exemption, because I don't want anyone to miss the power and the simplicity of what that exemption means for middle-class Americans, especially if you feel like you're struggling paycheck to paycheck and cannot get ahead. We're going to be back with more after these brief messages here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Radio, WFHR.
What I know about courage, I learned from my adoptive mom. She said sometimes you just gotta hold on and know we'll get through this.
Mom, we are so high up. Hold my hand.
No, you hold my hand.
Here we go.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more. This message is brought to you by Adopt US Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Farmers in Wisconsin have always been ahead of the times, and it's no different in the mid-1800s. George Esterly was running a large wheat farm outside of Whitewater, but reaping his crop by hand was back-breaking work. Esterly invented a mechanical harvesting machine and used it in his own fields in 1844. He then won a Chicago Mechanics Gold Medal 4 years later. But was he the first in the country to build a harvesting machine? The answer is coming up. Esterly followed up his win by opening a factory in the Whitewater area, building the harvesting machines and eventually other farm equipment too. By the 1880s, 500 people worked there. So was Esterly the first in the country to build a new mechanical harvesting machine? Yes. This man's early farm invention lives on as a remarkable slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr.
Covering all the news that affects you with humor and a unique perspective. Matinair on Air with Jane Matinair. Weekdays 10 till noon on locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and 1320 AM WFHR.
Join the conversation with your favorite hosts or shows anytime. Find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Share your thoughts on our social media channels wherever you are, whenever you want. The Civic Media Network of local radio stations here for you.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, home for Up North News Radio.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Time for a deep dive into the one issue that matters most in a capitalist democracy, money. This is Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money, a joint production of the Maggie Dawn Show and the Patriotic Millionaires. Now, here's Maggie Dawn.
Welcome back, everybody, and welcome if you're just joining us. Don't worry if you've missed the first segment today. You can always find those at civicmedia.us. Go to the Maggie Dawn Show page and check it out. All of our Maggie and the Millionaires episodes you can find there. Today is an especially important show, I think, not just because of the bravery of my guest in introducing what I think is absolutely groundbreaking and transformative legislation, but because of, frankly, how common sense the proposals are in the legislation. As I read through it last week and over the weekend again, the question that kept occurring to me was, why has it taken this long to return to these basic first principles, which is that our capitalistic economy doesn't work well without a wealthy, growing, vibrant middle class, right? And our democracy certainly does not work as well if people feel like they're being left behind. My guest this half hour is Representative Summer Lee of Pennsylvania's 12th Congressional District. She began in the fight for 15, but as you put it last segment, Representative, you quickly figured out that the problem was much bigger than that. And we've been talking about these particular elements of the American Stability Act, which you introduced last week, along with a number of co-sponsors. I wanted to dig into this cost of living exemption very carefully so that people can follow what we're saying. And so the first piece that the legislation proposed, as you were explaining, was not just a minimum wage, but a stability wage that will be calculated effectively based off what it costs a single person without any kids to live in a given region. So it's medical, housing, transportation, food, the basic stuff that every single human being to live with dignity requires. And then that stability wage, once we calculate what that is, we know what that looks like as an annual income, right? And you estimated, you shared with it that it varies, but it's somewhere in the ballpark of around $40,000. And then you said the piece that is going to blow people's minds with how commonsensical it is. If you make $40,000 or less, why are you paying any income tax on that? That is the fundamental point, is it not? Like, if you make 40K or less, no more income tax for you because you're making the very least that it costs a single person with no kids to live. Am I understanding what the Stability Act proposes?
Yes, that is precisely what it does. Because exactly what you're saying, we're seeing so many people who are paying far more than their fair share on incomes that truly are too low for us to be proud of in our economy. But the second part is that, right, when we think about who's not paying their fair share and what our and what it could look like if they were paying their fair share, and not if they were, when they do pay their fair share, when we think about all of the other just public goods, public programs that are so important to us that aren't as invested in because we see oligarchs who are not paying their fair share. The surtax on the other end, the opposite end, right, where we don't have up to living wage, you won't pay your federal income, you don't pay federal income tax. But once you get up to the very high end, that we are actually expecting you to pay more in. And that's how we continue to pay for our roads, our bridges, our programs, critical programs like Medicare, you know, so many things that that so many Americans don't just enjoy but need. They are earned and benefits are earned benefits. So that's why that is such an important piece of this legislation, right? There are many bills that float around, not just at the federal level, but at state levels too, right? That float around that says we need to raise the wage. That's where the fight for 15 comes from. But even this says that, listen, 15 might be the immediate, but we recognize that that's still not a living wage and it's still not a stable wage. So that's why these pieces are so important to it, to this particular bill.
It brings together so many of these economic justice concepts, right? And again, we cannot achieve social justice. We cannot achieve the promise that America was founded on without economic justice and providing people with the basics. And I don't mean providing people, ensuring that people that are willing to work a 40 and 50 hour work week live in dignity in this country. I am sick of people saying we live in the wealthiest country in the world when we have not said to every single adult person who's willing to work an honest 40 to 50 hours a week, that we promise you that you will not have to live in any sort of circumstance that is less than what a human being deserves to preserve their human dignity. That is what this is achieving.
But Maggie, real quick,
go ahead, please.
Because I really do want to add this piece, because even especially as we talk about human dignity, I want to actually remark that this bill, even in the raising of the wage piece, it does two things. It raises everybody's wage to the disability wage. And I want to emphasize that this also includes sub-minimum wages, right? So those are workers with disabilities. Those are your tipped workers, your service workers, who have for so long lived without the dignity that we lift up, that we profess to in the American economy. And I say that because there are going to be some people who work with disabilities, right? Yes. Who work with disabilities, and their work week might look differently than other folks' work weeks, but there is no less dignity in the work that they're doing, no less dignity in the work that they want to do. And they also will benefit from this.
And again, the biggest picture here is if you're saying to yourself, well, if folks aren't paying those income taxes, where are they made up for? The American Stability Act addresses that in effectively a surtax for those that make over $1 million, a 3% surtax, and a 5% surtax on those making over $15 million. Y'all, those people will be living in dignity. We could slap a 10% surtax on them and they would be just fine.
Workers are still going to live in dignity.
That's always right. They will get
however you find that.
I cannot thank you enough for all of your work on this, as well as your entire career of service to working people and these economic and social justice ideals that we really should make sure become realities here in this, the wealthiest country in the world. Representative Summerlee of Pennsylvania's 12th Congressional District, my thanks to you.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you so much for your work lifting all this up, right? And keeping us on the right track. We got to do more.
Let's keep going. I close every single one of my shows by saying I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But it is always better when we stand together, Representative Lee certainly showing us the way forward. Keep it locked, folks. When we come back, Dom Salvia joins the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, Rapids home of Nightlight with Pete Schwabe.
CBS News Brief. Pete Rose has died. He won two World Series with the Reds and another with the Phillies and eclipsed Ty Cobb's hit record, but was later banned for betting on baseball.
I'm part of history, you know, and there's no question in my mind, I'll die the hit king. I will die the hit king.
At least 130 deaths in six states are blamed on Hurricane Helene. President Biden says he'll tour the North Carolina damage on Wednesday.
I've directed my team to provide every available resource as fast as possible to your communities to rescue, recover, and to begin rebuilding.
The Israeli military says it's conducting limited raids against Hezbollah targets in a border area of southern Lebanon. CBS's Chris Libsey.
We were at a staging ground just south of the border with Lebanon where we could see tanks, armored vehicles of all sorts, virtually everything you would expect to see just before putting Israeli boots on the ground.
CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
Civic Media News, I'm Derek Tritz. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Fire dangers are heating up as we enter the fall fire season. The Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources released a statement Monday asking people to check fire danger before conducting outdoor burning activities. The statement follows predictions for this week's weather to be dry and have gusty winds, perfect conditions for fires to spread. And while it may be fall, state health officials are still urging people in Wisconsin about mosquito bites. James Kelly has more.
The Wisconsin Department of Health Services is reminding residents to protect themselves after two horses tested positive for eastern equine encephalitis. Mosquitoes are capable of spreading the disease to both animals and people, but it cannot be spread through person-to-person or animal-to-person contact. There has been one confirmed human case of the disease this year, likely from travel to another state. I'm James Kelly.
And that's what you need to know. I'm Derek Tritz, and this is Civic Media News.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabe. In Wow, Were We Ever Wrong News, many of the writers on Saturday Night Live did not think Will Ferrell was funny when he first joined the show. Ferrell recalls the early days in the new Netflix documentary Will and Harper, in which Ferrell and former Saturday Night Live writer Harper Steele take a cross-country road trip. Steele started on the show the same time Ferrell did and said the rest of the cast and writers thought Ferrell was a dud, but she just knew he wasn't. Will Ferrell got the last laugh as he went on to be an SNL favorite and star in movies like Elf and Anchorman. About every 10 years or so, Barry Williams shows up in the news and spills the tea about his fellow Brady Bunch cast members. A few years ago, he talked about his crush on his TV mom, Florence Henderson, and their innocent kiss. And now Williams is saying all the cast members hooked up. Williams, who played Greg Brady, says he hooked up with Marsha, the actors who played Peter and Jan dated, and even Bobby and Cindy dated. Relax, folks. They were step-siblings. And actors. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabe, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Breezy this evening, mostly clear tonight and cooler with lows in the upper 40s. Not as warm tomorrow, mid-60s with sun. Temps level off in the low 70s for Wednesday and Thursday, looking for a mostly sunny sky. Cooler again towards Friday. It's 67 right now.
Hey everybody, glad you could join us. I'm Tim Hubbelt, better known as the Polka Guy, on the Sunshine Polka Party Variety Show.
Join Tim every Saturday and Sunday for a great variety of polkas, waltzes, and more. Wake up at 7 a.m. on Saturday morning to get the weekend started on the right foot, then enjoy a lively Sunday afternoon at 1 p.m. Same great show, two different times, one fun weekend. The Sunshine Polka Party Variety Show, 7 a.m. Saturdays and 1 p.m. Sundays, only on WFHR, locally grown radio.
Matt Nair on air.
Dan Schaefer is here from the Recombobulation Area and now Civic Media's new political editor.
Jane, I know you like to talk about our assembly speaker.
Popcorn King, yes, Robin Voss.
So there is a potential outcome with these new maps where Greta Neubauer is the assembly speaker and Robin Voss is the minority leader. How does that sound, Jane?
I feel like my birthday came early.
Matt Nair on air, weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Jane, Matt Nair, and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, Up North News Radio's Pat Kreitlow joins us to kick around all things newsy. We wrap up the show with This Shouldn't Be a Thing. Don't miss it.
Matt Nair on Air, weekday mornings at 10.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Wisconsin and beyond. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. It's Monday. It's 3:30. That means I'm going to be joined by my little buddy and friend, Dom Salvia, who's got an amazing show after mine every day from 4 to 6 p.m., the Dom Salvia Show. Welcome back, Dom. Nice to have you.
Hey, Maggie Dawn. Happy day, sister. Nice to see you.
Good to see you as well. Folks, if you were looking to hear from Tom Perez, the director of the Office of Intergovernmental Affairs in the White House and a senior advisor to President Biden, literally just heard from the woman who set up the interview. He has been pulled into a briefing with the president about the evolving situation as a result of Hurricane Helene along the eastern seaboard. So let's start there, Dom. I am just absolutely blown away. It looks biblical in proportions, yeah, to say the very least.
It is. It's really scary stuff. And when we saw this thing barreling down last week, the speed at which it got to a category four and how fast it hit the land, it just kept on going. The meteorologists, people were warning, hey, this is going to be a big one. This could be bad. But it's hard to imagine that the folks, you know, up in Asheville, North Carolina, were thinking that they were going to get to the degree of damage and mayhem that has hit that community and several others in that area. It's terrible.
It really is. I've traveled all around that area, yeah, in Asheville, North Carolina. I've been in some of the areas on the coast of South Carolina and North Carolina, really beautiful, mm-hmm, country. And I mean, hundreds of people have died. I mean, this is an absolute emergency. And let's listen to the insightful comments of the former MAGA president as it relates to what's going on. Aaron, if you can play, let's see, this is cut six.
Alabama and all of the other states who have been really hit hard by that very large hurricane. That was that big one, a very large hurricane this week. We're with you all the way. And if we were there, we'd be helping you and you'll be okay.
You'd be what, tossing out paper towels to the crowd or maybe throwing some fried chicken to the crowd?
That's what it conjured up was images. Like, how would Trump handle a massive emergency, you know, where millions of Americans are in need of solid, fact-based, scientifically based leadership to help address a public health crisis? Oh, wait. We know what he would do because he was the president during COVID and he was telling people to use bleach and sunlight to cure themselves. He threw paper towels at the people in Puerto Rico when they suffered catastrophic losses. I mean, just from a common sense perspective. And if we're hooked up to the honesty machine here, yeah, for a minute, do you really think Donald Trump is the one you want in the Oval Office if your home gets demolished by a tornado or a flood, or we see a second global pandemic? I mean, I don't get it, Dom. There's just, the man does not have credibility when it comes to this sort of leadership because he doesn't have empathy for other people's pain.
And that certainly is difficult to overcome when he truly, truly has no empathy. And we've seen, as you mentioned, the other disasters that have befallen this country while Donald Trump was the president. His absolute lack of leadership made those issues, made those scenarios worse. So it's not going to be any better. And when we took a look at and think about and ponder the nightmare of a second Trump administration, well, it's not just Trump. It's also going to be the lackeys that come in. At least last time, there were probably some good, you know, deep state administrative types. You know what I mean? Like, they knew what was going on.
You mean some subject matter experts, right, that know, right, something?
I mean, yeah. Jason Miller, who's gonna be his Trump's point person on you know, hurricane relief in the southern part of the country? Of course, in Donald Trump's mind, it's always him. He is the best expert on everything, which is a terrible thought. And then the lackeys that would come in, you have to question that as well. Thankfully, we have a president like Joe Biden who has empathy, who understands, you know, the point of governance. It's amazing how we see right now. I mean, MTG, a lot of folks are screaming for aid, of course, and we want to give them as a community, as a country. That's what we are for. This is for the people. Well, they'll be the first ones to try to, you know, cut funding for FEMA or those kinds of things when everything seems to be going okay, at least for them.
Yeah, that's, again, I guess there is a role for government, you know, when natural disasters strike and people mm-hmm. need help. Frankly, MTG hanging out at the Bama game this weekend, probably not a good look. And Donald Trump there as well at the Bama game. What are you doing? Like, I'm sorry, SEC football and political pandering is more important than showing your face in a region that has been biblically destroyed, that has killed hundreds of Americans. Like, no. Saturday college football, much more important.
Yeah, everything's totally normal. I mean, a 1,000-year flood. You know, the description of biblical proportions. Well, you know, it's Saturday. Let's go watch some football.
It just doesn't. None of this sits well with me. And that's fundamentally the question I have for people. If it's your home that is now 10 feet underwater, everything that you've owned destroyed, who do you want in the White House? Do you want a person that expresses compassion meaningfully and sincerely, whatever you may think of her other policies? Or do you want someone who has consistently demonstrated an absolutely pathological inability to show compassion or concern for anybody other than himself? I just, like, this is the thing that to me puts this choice this November in such sharp relief. If I'm one of Donald Trump's advisors, I'm a little nervous about all this.
Oh, hell, Donald Trump slapped the label on a generator and go down and, you know, try to make some money out of it. Isn't that what they do? I mean, it's always the grift. So even if there were to be some sort of benefit for the folks, some disaster relief, you got to question the motives of the folks that would distribute it, given their propensity to grift. And is it thoughts and prayers now, or can we discuss, you know, the challenges of climate change? Is it too early? Because that hurricane sped up and fed like crazy and just blasted through this country. 1,000-year flood, biblical proportions, but, you know, there's no such thing as climate change.
It's just
hoax from China, if you believe the former president.
Or if you believe Ron Johnson, like, maybe it's a thing, but who cares? Because it's people on the coastline in the south that are dying, and people in on the continent of Africa and South America that are going to die, and it's not Wisconsinites. So all to the better. We'll have to find that sound of Ron Johnson saying that last spring in a Senate committee hearing, because, you know, Ron, again, always having the insightful fact-based analysis of human suffering. That is the question to me. Like, we are facing circumstances where people are suffering, right?
Yeah.
What do you want in a leader when confronted with massive scales of human suffering? And I don't care if we're talking about economic policy or emergency relief or the war in Ukraine or now Israel starting what is a ground invasion of Lebanon and our world inching closer to all out warfare in the Mid East. Do you want a president that is concerned about human suffering? That to me is a fundamental question. And I have yet to see any indication. If he claims to care about certain people's suffering, right?
Yeah.
When he talks about immigration, okay, I'll grant you that he seems to be concerned with people's safety and security in this country. But But so what? What does that mean other than mass deportations and saying, I don't care about the safety and human suffering of other people? When does that group of people that he doesn't care about their suffering include you, right? Like that is the, when does he come for you? When are you no longer in the in crowd? Which I guess leads me to this point. I mean, over the last, I don't know, couple of weeks, there has just been a seemingly never-ending stream of overtly racist and sexist stuff coming out of the former president's mouth and his supporters, like Mike Lindell, selling pillows for $14.88, which is a known Ku Klux Klan and Nazi number, 1488. They tattoo it on their bodies. This constant spewing of all of this nonsense. Like, why does it feel like Donald Trump and the MAGA cult is deciding which Americans are worthy of human dignity, right? Like, which Americans, which people living here are in the in crowd and who's in the out crowd? Like, I didn't know that our country's domestic and foreign policy was going to be reduced to lunchroom, like, cliques. That's what it feels like, only with existential consequences. What do you think's going on? I don't get it.
I think it's very consistent for the mega philosophy. Until it happens to me, and even if it does happen to me, as long as it's happening to somebody else, it's really not an issue. And the way, even to this case, as the AP was reporting, that Trump today, without evidence, saying that the Biden administration and North Carolina's Democratic governor are going out of their way to not get help in Republican areas. I mean, there's still people that are missing and haven't been identified. I mean, this is still an active crisis, and the former president is already trying to lay some sort of blame that something isn't happening quick enough, and you know it's the Democratic administration and the Democratic governor that are screwing the Republicans in North Carolina. I mean, that's where he goes to in a crisis. Blame something, even though there's no proof, even though he has no concept of what is actually being done. But hell, it comes out so easily, so he's just going to say it. It's the most consistent philosophy of the MAGAs.
Well, and I think J.B. Pritzker, when he was talking about Donald Trump calling Kamala Harris stupid, nailed exactly what's going on in the MAGA cult leader's mind. Let's listen to this sound, Aaron, if you don't mind. It's cut 8. And I'm sorry I sprung it on Aaron. Here's the setup here. What you just said, right? What Donald Trump is saying, that Joe Biden and the democratically elected and Democratic governor of North Carolina are withholding assistance from Republican counties. Why is Donald Trump saying that? Because it's untrue. It's false. It's a lie, obviously. He's saying that because that's exactly what he would do. Mm-hmm. It's projection. Let's take a listen.
Joe Biden became mentally impaired. Kamala was born that way.
Well.
She was born that way. And if you think about it, only a mentally disabled person could have allowed this to happen to our country. Anybody would know this.
And then J.B. Pritzker, if you've got his response as well. And if you don't, Aaron, that's okay, because I can summarize it. J.B. Pritzker was getting interviewed, I believe it was on NBC, on one of their Sunday morning shows. And he goes, well, Donald Trump said that because he's projecting, like he's the one that has this. Obviously isn't quite playing with a full deck, many would say, including his niece, who is a licensed psychologist. I mean, that's what he does. Kamala Harris isn't smart. More of the same. People, do you really want domestic and foreign policy in the United States to be reduced to what happens in high school cafeterias when human suffering is at issue? I sure don't. We'll be back with more Doc Salvia on the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. You want to join our conversation? 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. Back with more in just a moment. I died 100 times. You know.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR.
My part-time service in the Army National Guard makes it possible for me to be more for the community I call home. My training helps me at work when I lead by example. The Army National Guard has taught me the value of showing respect to those I come in contact with each day. My service also allows me to be there for my community in ways others can't. I help my hometown recover after nature strikes. My service in the Army National Guard allows me to keep my country and those I care about safe from threats. I also work with a network of professionals that help me succeed and accomplish the mission. Plus, the Army National Guard education benefits make getting a higher education a reality. Being an Army National Guard soldier makes living and serving in my community more rewarding every day. Learn how you too can live and serve part-time, close to home by visiting NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the Wisconsin Army National Guard, aired by the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association and this station.
Hi, it's Tori DeVito. In every family, small conversations can make a big impact. I grew up on tour with my parents. Kind of different, but we bonded over music just like other families do over sports, camping, or other interests. And we talked. Little everyday conversations from silly to serious that built a foundation over time. Honest conversations, like when my dad shared his experiences as an alcoholic.
Your honesty about that part of your life gave me a sense of integrity that I wanted to uphold in my own life. And I was so grateful that you and Mom had become these sober, stable people who were always there for me.
I wanted you to know from someone who's been in recovery more than 30 years now that hard work is what creates success, not alcohol or other drugs, whether it's music or anything else. I said it a lot, and I'm glad you took it to heart.
Talk, they hear you. For more information about talking with your kids about underage use of alcohol and other drugs, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
This is locally grown radio, WFHR.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Talking in my sleep at night, making myself crazy.
Out of my mind, out of my mind.
Wrote it down and read it out.
I don't know about you all, but the stuff Donald Trump says makes me lose my mind, out of my mind. But I'm glad I've got my good friend Dom Salvia here to keep my feet firmly planted on terra firma. Folks, I'm Maggie Dwan. You are listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Let's take some calls, shall we, Dominic? We
got a couple let's do it. Yeah,
good friends on the line. Gary from Sussex, you had some comments about a sustainability wage.
Yes, I am a private business owner, which I think you know. I'm an HVAC guy. Dom knows it. Dom saw me climbing up the ladder, and they're taking bets whether I was going to fall off or not. Remember
that? You won, man. Well done.
I didn't fall. Okay, so I work hard. I started out making $4 an hour as an HVAC guy. I worked my way up to a manager. Then I worked my way up to being a private owner. I pay my guys well, okay? They get $40 an hour. They work hard. Now, I also have guys that make $10 an hour because they don't want to work and they don't show up for work. Anybody in this country, if you work hard and show up on time, volunteer to work on Saturdays or Sundays, you're going to get to be an assistant manager, then you'll be a regular manager, and who knows what's going to happen. You have to work hard in this country.
Gary, let me just ask you, first of all, why do you keep the guys on the payroll that you pay 10 bucks to? Do you think they might show up on Saturdays and on time if you paid them 40 bucks an hour? It's partially a rhetorical question. And Gary, have you ever talked with people who do work very hard and they are not getting ahead? Because I promise you, sir, those people are aplenty. Like, do you believe that there are people that work hard and don't get ahead, that don't get promoted to manager, that people are working hard and still suffering?
People who work hard and want to get ahead, if they don't get ahead in that job, they'll move on. Same thing with me. If my guys, if I don't pay them enough, they'll move on to someplace else. No, I know that they're good. I'm willing to pay them a very good wage to do a good job. And
I think at base, Gary, I just say this. It sounds like we agree that people, that we agree with the fundamental premise, right? That we agree that if people are willing to work a good hard 40, 50 hours a week, that they should be able to earn a wage that would sustain one single adult with no children. It sounds like we agree about that. And you're saying, well, some people don't work hard. Assume that my premise doesn't apply to those people. If we're talking about people that are willing to work a hard 40 to 50 hours, it sounds like you and I agree that we should be able to pay them an actual wage that somebody can live on.
Right. And my guys work really hard, and they buy new cars. They live in houses. They got nice big lots. They live out.
Yeah, that $40 an hour and benefits. They live out in where? Anyways, it sounds like to me that Gary and I agree that folks that work hard should earn a actual living wage. And Dom, I've heard you and I have chatted about this before, and I fundamentally have this to say. Listen, if your business can't withstand paying people a living wage, maybe your business model ain't good.
Yeah.
Right. Or the market doesn't support that product that you're selling at that price point. Right. It's this fundamental, you know, people, I ask folks all the time, hey, when you go to Walmart, do you buy the $300 microwave that was entirely made in America? Or do you buy the microwave that's $75 with exactly the same power that had all of its parts imported from somewhere else? And it was just a, you know, what do you buy? Because at some point in time, the market tests whether or not you can actually sustain that business model by paying people a fair wage.
Well, the other side of that business model is by not paying a fair wage, or by manipulating the system, keeping them under a certain amount of hours, those kinds of things. Well, you can essentially put those folks onto the public dole, right? Because now they're getting safety net benefits. So in a sense, if you're not, as an employer, paying those living wages, you're essentially subsidizing your payment by putting them onto the very thing that lots of folks complain about, the social safety net system. It's part of the business plan. That should not be the case.
Let's take another call. Jack from Merrimack, you're on the Maggie Don Show. What do you have to say this afternoon?
Just very quickly, the accusation that Trump makes that Democrats are retaliating against Republican states, which is, there's no evidence of that, but that's the accusation that Trump has made. That follows a very clear fascist statement made by Joseph Goebbels, who was Hitler's minister of propaganda. And the statement is, accuse the other side of that of which you are guilty. Because Trump's whole campaign is based on retribution, revenge. That's it.
Yeah, and accusing. Yeah, and accusing. It is a right out of the Goebbels playbook. You accuse the other side of the things that you are actively doing yourself. Donald Trump has said, I'm going to seek revenge. I'm going to get even. He said that he would consider withholding benefits from democratically run states. He said that.
Right. Like, literally. So that he's again projecting the same philosophy that he has espoused and putting it onto this current administration, which has, there's no evidence that that's in fact the case. Of course, that would be asinine to do ever, but also certainly in an election year. Come on, man.
Come on, man. That's Dom Salvia. You can check out his show next from 4 to 6 every Monday through Friday. Remember, folks, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But it's always better when we stand together here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, home for Matt Nair on air.
Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, Late Show with Stephen Colbert writer and comedian Paul Mercurio joins the show. And in the second hour, Northeast Wisconsin-based comedian Rob Brackenridge joins me in studio.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 till 8.
At Civic Media, we encourage active political engagement and remind listeners to think critically about political advertisements you may hear during this critical election year. Our stations are licensed by the FCC and are required to accept all ads for federal candidates. We also air state and local candidates, as well as paid ads from issue and PAC groups. Truth is rarely as simple as any political ad may claim. So again, we urge you to think critically about what you hear in the spirit of promoting authentic and respectful civic dialogue.
This is your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you